Welcome to my Blog Talk radio show, Live Your Music. I'm Margot Joy Denader, and I'm a creative life balance coach, singer, songwriter, and the author of The Art of Living a Life You Love. I am happy to have my inspiring friend Robert Berry back on my show. During the show today, you'll hear about Robert's upcoming 3.2 tour, the live tour band members, and hear one of my favorite songs, Your Mark on the World, from Robert's 3.2 album. You'll also be hearing about Robert's new album for Alliance, which will release May 24th, and you'll get to hear a new favorite song of mine, Raise Your Glass, from the Alliance album during the show. Welcome, Robert.
Hey, Margot. How are you?
I am great, and I'm so happy to have you on my show again. It's going to be so much fun talking to you about all of the things you've got going on.
I'm a juggler now. All the balls are in the air, and I can't drop one, but you never know. If you hear a bit here, I have my trackball here, which your husband, Dudley, gave me this. And if you hear, that's one of the balls hitting the ground. So.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. One of the things that I always love about talking with you is you always manage to make me laugh no matter what's going on in my life, and I just I really appreciate that.
I was just talking to Greg Kinn's manager, and he says, you know, his old record company partner died. This drummer died. He said, Joel, I know. I mean, people die. He goes, yeah, but everybody around me is dropping like flies. And, you know, he's an older guy. So I said, well, you know, that's the rite of passage. Sometimes you think about the people that live in their hundreds where they even lose their children. I mean, that's a sad thing. But, you know, you live a good life. You stay healthy. That's one of the things you have to deal with. And they say that people that live into their hundreds, they can deal with that kind of thing. I don't want to get up on that because it sounds kind of sad. But it's I've been a little bit in that mode after losing my mom. And, so much of what I write about is sort of positive and, you know, persevering and making the best out of things. That, in fact, you know, some of the stuff in the New Alliance album is about that. Anyway, I'm rambling on. I'm going to stop. I've had two cups of coffee. I had a bunch of interviews this morning. Just warming up for you. Here we are.
Oh, I appreciate it. I know what you mean, though, about losing people and losing your mom. I've been through that, as you know, and I know what that's like.
Yeah.
And, oh, my gosh, it just, you know, really touches my heart thinking about you and your mom. And you're right. I mean, we got to remember what's positive in life, and there's just so much. And one of my guests that I had on a couple of weeks ago, two, 3 weeks or more ago, is 98. He's in my Toastmasters club, and he rejoined Toastmasters at 92 years old.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, and he wanted to have more connection, and he wanted to have, and he's an artist and author of a book called The Field Guide to the F Word.
Oh, funny. Huh.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, if we're gonna be here,
You mentioned Your Mark on the World, which is, I guess made me think about this, because what that song is really about is we all have certain things that are our passions in life, and if we live those to the fullest, people know us for that. Like, people know me for music, you know, that's my whole life, music, music, music. And if I make a mark on the world, it will be some song or somebody that I work with in a studio that that becomes an important part of their life. And that's what Your Mark in the World is about. And I think that's why you like the songs. You're a very positive person, too. And part of what you say about living your music is you want people to go out and do what they love. And, that's just, it's a part of that song, you know. And after we're gone, what is our mark on the world? You know, did we live it to the fullest? And did we enjoy ourselves that affect people also around us? Because I think that's really important. You get what you give, kind of thing, you know. I'm getting a call here from, this is my manager phone that my studio phone, believe it or not, the headphones got broken or something, so I couldn't call you on the studio phone. So this is the one I use for agents. So this agent calling, I'm just going to decline. I don't want to hang up on you. There we go. He's gone.
Yeah. gone. That's the problem with cell phones and other phones where, you know, they can interrupt you no matter where you are and then totally derail your train of thought. And But, you know, back to your mark on the world, it reminds me so much of a quote that I love that Maya Angelou said to Oprah, because Oprah was saying, oh, I'm finally going to make my legacy is going to be this school she's opened over in Africa or somewhere, you know, or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And Maya said to Oprah, she said, Oprah, your legacy is every life you touch, every life.
Yeah.
And it's interesting when you think about that because it can be in both ways, you know. Your legacy can be a positive one or it can be a negative one, depending on what you choose to focus on, what you choose to do, and how you choose to treat people. And that's one of the things that's been so awesome about knowing you is that you are so positive yourself. You know, you've always said that I'm one of the most positive people that you know, but yet you're also one of the most positive people I know and are able to reframe things and find what's good about things, and that, you know, that really makes a huge difference. And that's part of why it's so much fun going to your recording studio and recording songs with you, is because it's always fun.
We look for the best in everything, and there's even good to find in bad things. You know, if something bad happens to you, the lesson you learn from bad things is so great. It's probably a better lesson than you learn from good things. Good things you can enjoy, but bad things you have to figure out, oh, what went wrong? So you got that positive slant on it if you want to look for it. And that's a problem. Some people, they don't want to look for that. Oh, look what happened to me. It's so bad. No, look what happened to you. How are you going to make sure that doesn't happen again? Or maybe this is a good thing. I could tell people, that's terrible. You got to write a song. You know, it makes a great song. When you go through pain and things, it really, I mean, the whole Rules Have Changed album lyrically was a little bit different when I started it with Keith Emerson. Then halfway through, he died, and I went to finish up the album lyrically, and it took on a different angle, you know, and it was me losing the guy I had. The only top 10 song I've ever had was with Keith, a great friend, my most famous friend, the guy I was working with again after 27 years on our second album, a funny guy, just so many things. And it changed my scope of what I was writing, how I was feeling. And I also believe that's why the album has done so well, because it's just so honest. I mean, I look at lyrics now and listen to songs, and it's like I have a hard time believing that in that frame of mind I was at, that I just let it flow. I just put it down the way I felt it should be lyrically and everything, you know. And it's the most honest album I've ever done, although I always write from the heart and what I feel. This one really dug deep inside of me, and more people connected to it. And even in its negative of losing Keith, positive things came out, you know, and I don't know if that makes sense. But
it totally makes sense. It totally makes sense. It's one of the things, remember that little book I gave you called Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude that you gave Keith years ago?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that book in there, he talks about what he calls a seed of a benefit in adversity. And the seed of the benefit of this was that you created this amazing album because of how much you enjoyed knowing Keith, performing with Keith, just, you know, talking with Keith, all of it. And I remember you saying before, when I've interviewed you before, that you would say, well, what would Keith do? What would Keith do? And so you had that connection during that time when you were working on it.
Definitely. And it's very cool for me that after, you know, it was released in August of last year, like I told you, I did two interviews this morning. I've been doing interviews all along. I have about 130 or so interviews on this thing. People are still interested. You and I talk every 6 months anyway. This is something I plan on and I love doing. This isn't part of the promo train, you know, but I've done so many of those and doing more. I'm doing one for Amazon Japan right now that's actually a written one because I don't speak Japanese. Obviously, I barely speak English. So, but you know, it's a lot of positive stuff, and the album is lasting a year, which is great news for me because I have this new band I put together, and there's going to be a tour, September, October, and the whole thing. It's kind of amazing. You know, it took me a year to finish it after Keith died. It took me 6 months to even want to finish it, then a year to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing is taking another year with its release and ending with this tour or starting with the tour, however way you look
starting.
At it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's 3 years of my life with this album that has been the biggest reward for me personally that as a musician I could ever have because I decided to finish this album the way that Keith and I laid it out and wanted to do it with no parameters on myself. I wasn't going to even release it. And it was just done honestly and from the heart. And now it's fulfilled 3 years of my life in the most wonderful way. It's pretty cool.
It is major cool. And Dudley and I both really love the album a lot. And just, you know, some of our favorite songs on it are definitely Your Mark on the World and
yeah.
The Letter and What You're Dreaming Now. I love that one. Somebody's Watching. I was just re-listening to the album yesterday afternoon while I was doing some work, and it started out with the first one, One by One.
Right, One by One, a very hard intro, yeah.
I love it, though. You know, I really love it, and it was I was listening to it, and I was thinking, you know, it really reminds me a little bit of your album Pilgrimage to a Point, which I love.
Yeah.
You know, and that came out, what, 92 or 93, something like that.
Yeah, and, you know, that was two songs on there were for what was at that time going to be the follow-up three album, the 1988 three album. We were going to do it in 1989, start a new one, and Last Ride into the Sun and Another Man. Actually, there was another one on there, too. I forget the name of it. But those I wrote in what I had learned about what three would be good at and what we should do with it, what I thought, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Keith was sort of done with because of all the criticism he got until 27 years later when he realized we were really this good band that he sort of left behind because of fan criticism. And so that Pilgrimage was really the second three album in concept. And of course it was also the second GTR album in concept because I worked with Steve Howe back then too. So Pilgrimage
mm-hmm.
had a lot of second albums that never saw the light of day on it, but it was really that style, you know, and you're right. The Rules Have Changed is still my vision, you know, along with Keith, of
mm-hmm.
what we learned by touring, by recording together, by writing together in 1987, 88.
Mm-hmm.
Just took 30 years now to make it happen.
Well, you know, I always remind myself and remind my coaching clients and even family too, is that everything happens in divine timing. And divine timing, so many things have to happen for things to be the right time for them to happen. And, you know, I don't know. All I know is it seems like this is definitely the right time for that album to have come out. The 3.2 album it's giving you a way to leave your mark on the world in an incredible way, but it also is giving so much joy to so many people. I mean, I watched the posts on the 3 Facebook page, 3 Emerson Berry Palmer Facebook page, and the 3.2 page as well, and it just, I don't know, and then also the comments people give you, and it just, you know, you've given people so much joy with this album and all the other albums that you have. It just really, your mark on the world is incredible, and it's incredibly positive, and it just kind of blows me away, and I'm just so happy for you and happy for all of us that we have the music as well.
I can't wait to put it out live. I have some really great musicians that I've asked to do this, and they're working really hard to get all this material down from my 30 years of music. It's more in the progressive rock vein, you know, starting with the Pilgrimage to a Point, which had GTR and three songs on it, and by Titan of Ambrosia, and I did a lot for Magna Carta Records with some tribute things to ELP and to Yes. That I have a letter from Steve Howe telling me how much he liked my bass line to my version of Roundabout. He thought he liked it better than original. I thought, what? The original bass line to Roundabout is the song. You know, he goes, oh, this is really good. And
I
those
love
kind
that
of things.
Song.
So all
yeah.
The, yeah, all these songs we're going to be able to play for the first time live. And it might only happen just for the next year. I don't know if this band and tour is going to go longer than what happens with the next sort of trek that we go on. We're going to start it this year and take it into next year and see how it goes. But at least one time this is going to get out here, my whole 30-year career in music and play, even off from Dividing Line. We're going to do Can't Let Go, which is an album I had on Frontiers a couple of years ago, a solo
album.
Yeah,
that's a great album, too. Yeah. I love that album.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about it. It's sort of me fulfilling a dream. I actually didn't ever have a dream about doing my 30 years of music in front of an audience. I'm sort of a team player that just loves working with people, you know, Greg Kinn I'm out with, I was out with Sammy, Ambrosia, all these different things. I like being a good team player, but all of a sudden, with the success of The Rules Have Changed, I thought, wow, you know, that people are really talking about a lot of the material, a lot of the albums, things I didn't even know they knew about. I had an album out in South Africa, and In These Eyes, and they were talking about some songs on that. And I said, I got to put this in front of the audience and at least go out and shake their hand and thank them for the support for all these years, because you know how hard it is as a musician to make a living and stay afloat, or just to stay in the public eye even without making a living, you know?
Yeah.
And they've made it so possible for me to stay viable in the thing I love most. Pretty cool.
Well, that love that you have for it spills out onto everyone that you work with as well. So, you know, do you want to play the song, Your Mark on the World, first and talk about that, or do you want to tell us about the people that are going to be on the tour? Which would you prefer?
Well, I'll tell you real quick who's on the tour. Andy Collier is in New York. He's a keyboard player extraordinaire, just a fantastically dedicated and excellent musician. I can't say enough good things about him. Plus, he is so organized and helping to push this tour along and organize the band. He's fantastic. He's going to blow people away. Paul Keller, who you know, is my longtime friend and started with me way back in Hush 30 years ago. And he's the guitar player. I couldn't do without Paul. Paul has played every song I've ever written, has been involved in just about everything I've done, even went on tour with Three back in 1988 as our guitar player. And he's just invaluable to me as a partner in the music. And I'm glad that he said yes, because he's a busy guy and has a high-tech job that is really demanding. But he's kept the music alive, and he's just incredible. We have the drummer from a band called Spock's Beard. Jimmy Keegan was in Spock's Beard for quite a while and gained a lot of respect, a lot of fan base. And because there's so much vocal work in my songs, we really needed a guy that only wasn't a great drummer, but was a great singer. And Jimmy has a solo career of his own. He sings a super high, I mean, he could sing a Yes song effortlessly, a super high voice. And we got together here in the studio and recorded a few little snippets of songs, and just right out of the box, it sounded so good. Then once we get together, you know, together again, you really practice the whole set. It's going to be tremendous. So anyway, that's the band, four-piece band. We're all going to be working super hard and playing and singing our butts off.
You forgot to mention the fourth person. That's you.
You know, if I show up, you know how it is with the guys now, like what's his name in Foreigner. Sometimes he shows up, sometimes he doesn't. So, no, I'll be there. And I'm playing bass and my songs, of course, and I'll probably play a little bit of keyboard, but not much. Andrew's got it covered. The guy is just amazing.
Oh, yeah. I've been watching his posts on Facebook about it, about how hard it is learning the songs, and he and Paul both. You know? And I'm just picturing.
I told him, I said, yeah, I'm going to ask you to do this. I said, you're going to be crazy to say yes. I mean, insane. He goes, oh, I'm honored. I really want to do it. I said, You're sure now? Yeah, I'll get the material together, start listening to it. He called me. He goes, well, I put the set together, just all your songs. He goes, okay, it's going to be hard. And what does he say online sometimes? I spent 3 hours learning 20 seconds of music, or all day learning, you know. But he's a stickler for detail and the sounds and everything. It's not just the playing, you know.
Yeah.
He really understands tonality and structure and which synthesizer, which piano, what to use. And it's exciting for me to see he after everybody to get into it on that level, but also make it their own in a way too, where they take pride in it. So I don't want to go out there and be a cover band. I want to go out there and really play our hearts out. So that's what they're doing.
Well, I think that sounds like it's going to be amazing. So now for the tour, it starts in September, correct?
Yes. The end of September. And I don't have the West Coast dates. I think it would be like 5 West Coast dates. I have 2 of them, but until we can get all 5, I can't really put them out because I'm not the manager. That's why I'm talking to him. That's
no,
why
that's,
back
that's,
and
that's okay. You can people
yeah,
can find
yeah.
out about it on the Facebook page for 3 Emerson Barry Palmer, and they can find out about it on Robert Barry on Facebook and also in the 3.2 group. I'm sure that as soon as the dates are announced, they'll be in all of those places and on your website, robertberry.com.
Yeah, the only real anchor thing I know, I think it's the 11th of October, we're headlining Prog Stock, which is a big progressive rock festival in New Jersey. And it's pretty cool. There's a couple other things. There's something that I'm going to do there with a song off the 3.2 album with another person that we will never do anywhere else. And I won't say that because I'm going to save it just for the show. And Progstock, I'm honored. We're opening the first night headlining. And I think Saga is headlining on the Sunday. Another one of my favorite bands. And Brand X is headlining on Saturday, a great fusion band. So they used to be Phil Collins' fusion band from Genesis, the drummer. And he's not in it anymore. But yeah, and there's bands all day long for these festivals. Pretty cool.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned Phil Collins just now because I loved Genesis. I really did. And yes, too. I was listening to Spotify, though, the other morning, and this is funny, but it had all these songs you can sing in your car, you know, and I was looking through the list, and there was You Can't Hurry Love, and I thought at first that it was Diana Ross, right, you know?
Yeah.
I put it on, and I thought, wow, that doesn't sound like Diana, and it was Phil Collins doing You Can't Hurry Love. And I thought, wow, that's actually pretty cool. So I liked it. I saved that as one of my favorites. I thought it was really a cool song.
Yeah,
and
part of
this
transition period.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of his transition period from being a progressive rock drummer and singer to being a guy that the audience doesn't even know he plays drums. You know, they just think of him as a singer. Funny.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, he's right, though. You can't hurry love. I mean, actually, Diana or whoever wrote the song is right. You can't hurry love, and you can't hurry when things are going to happen as far as albums or tours or how they're all going to work out. But you can enjoy the journey, right?
That's right. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, let's talk just briefly about your song, Your Mark on the World, and then I'd like to play that and then talk to you about it a little bit more. Okay?
Yeah, you know, that, like I've already said, I wonder, you know, what people remember somebody like when they're gone. And I was just thinking, you know, they remember you for whatever your passion. I mean, if you love baseball, people, Billy, I love baseball, you know. And if you're a musician like me, they go, oh, yeah, I saw him play, or I just said one of my songs that I have in my playlist. Yeah, but there's always something. If you have a passion for something, it comes to the top of the heap with your personality and your face and everything when people remember you, and you could still be alive, but that's what they think of you as. And that sort of sparked me to write this song. I thought, you know, Keith, people online are remembering him as this great person, but of course, mm-hmm. the world's greatest keyboard player. Now, at the time, mm-hmm. the Emerson Estate was trying to get me to not use Keith's playing. They want him remembered as a composer. I thought, you know, that's not going to happen. People, when they see and Keith Emerson's name and they think about him, they think about the greatest keyboard player there ever was in rock and roll and playing that hard classical stuff and everything. It's just amazing. His mark in the world was not being a composer. It was being a great
right.
player. Sure, he composed too, but that's not what you see when you picture him. You know. So anyway, come up with the song, and that's kind of what it's about.
Okay, and it's a little over 5 minutes, and I'm going to play that, and then we'll talk about it a little bit more after the song.
Sounds good.
Beneath the fire.
Robert
there it goes.
Yeah, here. Wow. Oh my gosh, that song. And then
it's always fun for me to hear them on the headphones on the phone here, because I don't get to hear them that often anymore. You know?
Well, I know that's actually true for me too. With a lot of the songs that I like most and albums I like most, is I don't drive around that much anymore, and so I don't have that much time to just sit and listen to albums and just hear the music. And that's one of the things I do love about doing the show, is that I get to really focus on listening to the song while the show's on, and then talk to whoever created the song about the song afterwards as well. And your fingers were just flying over those keyboards. I can just picture what Andrew was having to learn. For that song.
We're not actually playing that song, but some of the ones we are doing, somebody's watching. Even Powerful Man has some stuff in there that it's a lot of work. You gotta realize too that he's learning Carnival Nine by almost like a Palmer, because I did a version of that with Jordan Rudess and Simon Phillips on drums, and it's incredibly hard. And Yeah, but, you know, all those solos, that was the one thing that Keith and I hadn't worked on, because, of course, Keith was going to do the solos after we got everything else together. And when I listen to it, it almost seems like it's not me playing those solos. It just kind of flew out of me. I'd do two or three takes, and I'd pick the one I like. Maybe I'd fix a few notes here and there, but it was interesting. Most of the solos on the album are unlike things I've played before. Well, I don't know how that happened, but it did.
Connection.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, connection to Keith. I don't know, some of the things like that are Ooga Boogas. Wayne Dyer used to call them Ooga Boogas, and I love them, you know. But, why can't we be connected to people who are non-physical now, you know? And I think
who knows?
Well,
right?
What
who
it
knows?
Takes.
Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, Wayne used to say this. He goes, none of us knows enough to be a skeptic about it. You know, really, I mean, you know, how do you know? You know, maybe that is true. But what I've observed, though, with people that do amazing things, whether it's music or whatever they're doing, and they're in the moment and connected with that inner being of theirs, whatever you want to call it, source, great artist, the great creator, God, whatever. You know, it's a whole, it's not ego, for example. You know, it's not about you. It's about letting that creativity flow through your fingers, in this case with the keyboards, or through your voice out into the world. So, you know. And then that makes your mark on the world.
There you go. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, speaking of your mark on the world, you have made a mark in so many different ways, starting out, for me anyway, with Hush way back when. And then, you know, Back to Back and Pilgrimage to a Point and the various albums and the 3 album and then the live albums that we talked about on one of my shows too. I mean, I've talked to you about so many of these different albums during the shows, and it's just so amazing to me when I think of the stack of CDs that I have of yours, the 3.2 CD that's in my car, and then also the vinyl of it, which, by the way, do you have any of those left? I mean, can people still get
them? Oh, yeah. I've only sold about half of them. I haven't pushed it that hard. Only the Facebook. I have 300 of them. I think 150 are sold. Yeah. The numbers started at like 100 or 120 or something. So people thought, oh, they're gone. Oh, no. But they're not. It's only at a certain point, I'll probably put a bigger push, because my office is full of December People vinyl albums and 3.2 vinyl albums, and I don't have any room. But I think by the time we go out on tour, I definitely will probably sell them all out, and they'll be gone.
Yeah. Well, I I'm one of those ones that loves to have the CD and loves to have the vinyl of it. And I just, I'm so glad that I do have the 3.2 and the December People and the vinyl as well as the CDs. It's so funny because I guess partly because I grew up with it, but I love holding an album, an actual album cover, and then seeing the album itself, the record, and seeing it spin on the turntable. I don't know. I just really love that.
It's also a real piece of art. The album cover is so much bigger and visual. You know, I'll tell you a secret, which, you know, I've never told anybody this, but when I do interviews, and like I said, I don't really consider an interview. We have these conversations every 6 months about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about really being positive. But, you know, we talk about the album stuff, because that's my thing. But I sit here in front of the Pro Tools, which you and Dudley have sat here and we've done albums. And I put the vinyl album up. I'm holding it in my hand right now, but I put it on the board, leaning against my computer monitor, and it's sort of my vibe machine, if I could say that. You know, it makes me proud of the work, of the accomplishment. It helps me relive the whole thing. But I don't put the CD up. I put the vinyl album, the big one, because it has power to it. It's just interesting, at least to me. It's powerful for me to see that big 3 and 3.2 on the front cover. And it sort of inspires me and gets me excited all over again about why I did this, how lucky I am to be able to keep doing it, how I've been very fortunate. I had one person ask me in an interview, but how do you feel about, you know, not really being that successful, not that kind of household word like the name? And I said, well, you know, let me put it this way. The guys that I know that have been really successful, my now, they sort of burned out. They had their success. They're resting on the laurels. You know, they kind of, you know, I hear, see these bands that never even put out a new album, or they don't have original members. They have one guy. I said, I'm not that guy. I'm a guy that says, what can I do tomorrow? You know, I don't need to be hugely famous and super wealthy off it and all that. That's not why I do it. I do it because I love it. So for me, it's been a blessing, and I've been able to make my living in music, but not be, I don't know, who, you know, somebody really famous who sort of doesn't have any ideas anymore. I have ideas because I have to have ideas. I'm always searching for my Sgt. Pepper's, you know, my best album. And I thought 3-2 would be that one I was doing with Keith, and maybe it is, but now I'm thinking, got this new Alliance album out, and as far as AOR Rock, this is the best album that Alliance has ever done. I'm so proud of it. Maybe in that, you know, anyway.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just realized we only have like 20 minutes left, and I want to play that song from Alliance, and I want to talk about them. And, you know, at first I was thinking, oh, my God, what are Robert and I going to have a conversation about this time? You know, we've had so many of these. You know, I started thinking, well, what things – do I want to talk about? What things are the listeners going to want to hear? And thinking, oh, how are we going to be on for 60 minutes? And then, just as usual, we've only got 20 minutes left. And it's just flying by. Yeah. Anyway, first of all, though, before I play the song that I want to play from that, tell us a little bit about the history of Alliance. I noticed that Ronnie on Facebook didn't even know about Alliance, and I'm thinking, I wonder how many other people that have known you a long time and loved your music don't even know about Alliance. So if you could tell us a little bit about the history of that, who was in it and who is in it, and then we'll play the song that I want to play.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of people in the U.S. don't know about it. It's been this is our fourth album, and it's been released mainly in Europe and Japan, and a little bit through my website, but, you know, I didn't have the reach to really get it out there, and I'd sort of let the record company in England do all of the stuff they wanted to do with it. Didn't really think as much about it as I should have, probably. You always expect the people that are in the record business to do that kind of work, but more and more the musician has to do the kind of work to get the word out. So let me go back. 1985, I released an album called Back to Back, with no purpose whatsoever. I got 500 free albums from a pressing plant. So I pressed that album. My friend Rob Fowler sent it to everybody. Yeah, well, I didn't know he was sending it out. Rob Fowler sent it to everybody. I got Picks of the Week in all the major trade magazines. I wound up getting Herbie Herbert to manage me, the Journey manager, and I wound up getting Geffen Records involved. And John Claude of Geffen Records said, I really like this guy, gave my cassette tape to Carl Palmer and gave it to, I think it was David Lauser from Sammy Hagar's band, because Sammy had just gone in 86 to Van Halen, and they wanted to keep the Sammy Hagar band together with a new guy. So I, fortunately enough, the cassette tape went to Steve Howe, and Steve Howe said, I want you in GTR. Well, Steve Howe's one of my heroes, so I said, okay. And then the guys from which became Alliance called me, Sammy's old band, and said, we'd like you to be in our band. What do you think? I said, oh, I'd love to do it, but I've already committed to Steve Howe. I'm moving to England.
Mm-hmm.
You go forward 3 years, went through GTR, went through three. 92, I think it was, they called me, hey, we hear you're home. We saw and found the right guy. I said, let's try it. I went to Sammy's house. We got the guys together. We started recording in Sammy's little studio at the house there, and it just really clicked. And we've been a band ever since 92, putting out albums every 6 to 8, 9 years. I mean, Gary, the guitar player, plays in Boston. David was Sammy's drummer. Our original keyboard player, M. Fitzgerald, was in Night Ranger, and then he was playing keyboards and background vocals and stuff for Van Halen Behind the Curtain. So we were always really busy. You know, I joined Ambrosian that time, Greg Cannon that time. So it took years to actually find the time for us to get together. And this time, it's been maybe 6 years since the last album, Road to Heaven. And I don't know exactly. But so that's kind of the history of the band. And now, for the first time, they're putting a bigger push on it. And I think because 3.2 has done so well, that they feel there's more of an interest in the Alliance album. Plus, Alliance, you know, in my progressive music, I have a little bit of AOR. I like the hook of the chorus singing the hook. I like lyrics that mean something, where a lot of progressive stuff, the lyrics are more ethereal. Well, in our AOR stuff, which is what Alliance is, it's more straight rock band, I like to put a little more progressive. You know, I like to have it a little more musical. So there's a few songs on the Alliance album, a couple of my favorites, actually, that I've ever written. One is called Time, which has to do with what I was telling you about. I don't feel any different now than I felt when I was 18 as far as music and ideas and everything. I feel the same. That song's about that. There's one called Uncertain, about really the death of my mom and how it really rattled me. But, you know, we don't get past that pain. We just learn how to handle it. So that uncertainty that it makes you feel, you sort of come to terms with it, but it never goes away. So it's a positive song, but it's kind of heavy and dark, you know. So anyway, it just really turned out to be a much better album. Even though I love Alliance and I wish we'd do a little more with it, a much better album than I was expecting to be. It really turned out great. And I'm looking forward to us released May 22nd. It's coming up pretty soon.
Oh, wow. May 22nd. I had it as 24th. But anyway, that's
You know what?
Close.
It is the 24th. They changed it to the 24th. I forget why. You're right.
Oh, okay.
I should know better.
Oh, don't be shitting on yourself. That I loved about Louise Hay, she wanted to delete the word should, because whenever you should on yourself or someone else, it's like you feel guilty. So no shoulding. No shoulding.
That's
on
what
yourself.
I thought. I didn't think you said should, so I'm glad you clarified that. I said, what did she say?
Yeah, what came out of Margot's mouth? I mean, people are going to wonder,
wow.
What came out of Margot's mouth during the show? You know, okay, so Raise the Glass, though, is the one that I've got queued up to play, and I love it. It's the,
again,
it's the one that,
yeah,
that has
it's
the
about
video.
Looking around at the we talked about, you know, tough times can teach you things. It's about, you know, really cherishing what's around you and toasting to it, and usually, you know, that has to do with someone very close to you. If it's a parent, a husband, a wife, a boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it is, kids. You know,
all the above.
All the above. You know, it's cherish the things around you, and the person is most important, for sure.
Yeah, and don't take it all for granted, you know, because we're all here for what Earl Nightingale loved to call our holiday on Earth, you know, and none of us know how long that holiday is going to last.
That's right.
Remember to enjoy the journey and celebrate successes. So this is Raise Your Glass. It is a short one compared to the other one. It's only 3.5 minutes. I'll play that and then we'll talk some more. Okay?
Cool. Yeah.
Raise your glass, bow your head, make a toast to the one that keeps you warm in bed. Be it heaven or hell, the time is right. Take what you're given and learn to fly. Light the candle, walk the bridge, keep a heart of gold and learn to live. No time like the puzzle to take a chance. Life is for living, no looking back. But the end of the day, a little to the left, a little to the right, didn't seem to care, but couldn't sleep the night. Raise the glass, bow your head, make a toast to the one that keeps you warm in bed. Be it heaven or hell, the time is right. Take what you're given and learn to fly. Light the candle, walk the bridge, keep a heart in gold and learn to live. No time like the present to take a chance. Life is for living, no looking back.
Wow, Robert.
I can hear the football stadium singing that. Yep, I can hear the football stadium singing that with us now.
Well, you know, it's for anybody that wants to raise their glass and celebrate life. And it's a, I don't know, to me it's a celebration of life. It, like the first time I saw the video and heard that song, I thought, I need to have that on the show and talk to Robert about it. So. And now you've got me curious about the other songs that are on the album that's coming out soon, so I'm going to have to get that.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones on there. You know, Uncertain, the one I mentioned to you, is actually coming out. It's the next. They call them lyric videos when they have the words in there. And it's a sort of a simple form of a video, but the guy did such a great job with it, I think. And I'm looking forward. I haven't seen Uncertain yet. But Uncertain's coming out maybe the end of this week. I think they told me by the first of next week for sure, but it could be by Friday if he gets it done.
Are they going to do one for Time, the song that you were telling us about?
No, I think they're just going to do the two. Yeah. It's we all have to hear Time. I can't explain it. I'm just really excited to hear it.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear it. What?
As always,
what?
I don't have a copy of the album yet. You know, I think they have them already. The CD's pressed. Of course, it'll be online on the 24th and you can pre-order it. But you'd think I'd have a copy of it, but I don't. You know, like an initial release, so I could see it. Hello? Before it comes out?
Yeah. Well, you know, that happens a lot of times with printing of things when Dudley designs them, too. You know, sometimes the books will be, or whatever they are, will be delivered to the client, and we haven't even seen it yet. And we're going, oh, God, I hope it looks good.
Yeah.
So I know that feeling. But tell us a little bit about the cover of the album and the name of the album, because I'm curious about how they came up with the cover art and how you came up with the name for the album.
You know, Fire and Grace was actually a song that Gary, David, and I sat in the room at Soundtech here, and Gary had a riff, and David started playing drums, and we kind of developed the music. It wasn't a song at all, except for Gary's riff, and it kind of came together as music, and there were no words for it. And we did it probably, I think it was 6 years ago. It was one of the first ones, and it just sat for 4 years, 5 years. And lots of times I like to work at least with a title or a hook line for the chorus, something. I don't like to just do music. You know, it has to mean something to me. So this one was just music and didn't mean anything to me until I started to sit down and write some words. I went, oh, I can do this and that. And then the story kind of unfolded, Fire and Grace. It started to feel like it meant something. And I put it all together with, of course, we had the bass and drums already and Gary's guitar. And then when I sent all the songs to the record company, they said, oh, we want to call the album Fire and Grace. I thought, great, that's a good title, I think. I like that. Mm-hmm. And honestly, they sent us four covers. We had all kinds of covers, and Gary thought it should be this way. David thought it should be that way. I thought it should be a certain way. And the artist did a little bit of what all the three band members said, and they all looked lousy. You know, we just did not have a grasp on this Fire and Grace at all. But finally, Khalil Kirk, who is the president of the record company, Escape, said, look, I like this cover. I'm going to have them put a little more of this fire around here and that side, and I want to use this cover. This is what it should be. And usually, I mean, we have total artistic freedom with Alliance. Usually we'd be going, well, wait a minute, we have an idea here. But it's not like the three of us disagreed, but we couldn't find something we agreed on. We knew what we didn't want, but not what we did want, I guess I should say, which is a terrible place for a graphic artist to have to work with anybody, which, you know, if someone doesn't say, well, I want a green grass. Oh, great, I can do that. And, well, I don't want green grass. I don't want this. It's hard because you know what they don't want, but they don't know what they do want. So anyway, Khalil put his foot down, which I was very happy about, and we all love the cover now, but at the time, we just couldn't see it, you know? We're seeing the art without the name and stuff on it, and it just didn't feel right. But it seems to be, it has a good energy to it. I think it's classy, it's bold, you know? It comes at you, and very different than 3-2, which is very simple and harkens back to the 1988 3 cover, you know. So that's how it happened, and we're very pleased with it. And the booklet is, I don't know, it's quite a few pages, a 16-page booklet, and we have a little write-up from us, and all the lyrics are in there, and they do good work at Escape, really good work. Escape LTD Music.
Tell us a little bit about the song Fire and Grace, though. I mean, can you tell us, like, the chorus or anything from it that will give us something more about it, or do you want to just keep it as a surprise?
Well, yeah, I think we just wait on that. It's I will tell you, in style, you know, there's, on the album in general, what I'm really thrilled about, besides the little bit of progressive sound and style that I put into it, Gary really harkened back to the kind of 70s guitar stuff, which you can even hear in Raise Your Glass. It's not the shredding kind of 80s stuff, or even Boston, where he plays in.
Mm-hmm.
It's none of that. It's
mm-hmm.
really classy, intelligent, mature kind of stuff that just, it's the perfect color on the canvas, kind of. And I'm really excited about that. He always does a great job, but it seemed to me like this one, he just really did some stuff that just knocked me out. And you're going to hear a lot of that on the album. Even the mandolin in Raise Your Glass there in that last chorus before it goes to the end, that I wasn't expecting it. He sent that to me. He goes, hey, I did a mandolin here for that. What do you think? I put it in. I went, oh, man, listen how cool that sounds. Yeah, just unexpected. And the whole album's like that, I think. It runs the gamut. If you know Alliance music at all, it runs the gamut from more rocking to a little more progressive, a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then something like Time, which is sort of timeless. So I'm looking forward to seeing what people think. I think this Alliance album is going to put Alliance on the map. You might know this, but Alliance only played one gig in our whole 30 years together, and that was in St. Louis 10 years ago. Sammy Hagar was opening a new club, and he said, I'd like you guys to go to St. Louis, because kind of was the old Sammy Hagar band, and I had played with Sammy
mm-hmm.
in the middle of the 90s, and take my son Aaron, he'll sing a couple of my songs, and you guys do your set. So we said, great. We did two nights there in St. Louis, and I didn't know it, but I met my wife's brother that night,
mm-hmm.
and Ron became a good friend of mine. And then a year later, I was dating a sister. I don't know how that happened. But so Alliance is more than just music for me. It changed my life, that, you know, meeting Ron, and it's just really something. The whole Alliance
Ron
thing is
seems
quite
like,
a story.
Ron seems like a great guy, and oh my God, I love the pictures. And Rebecca and Ron are both awesome. You know what, though? We only have 2 minutes left. Can you believe it?
Oh, my God.
So what
didn't
do you want
to... Didn't you say first, you want it to be a half hour, 45 minutes, or an hour? And I said, even with an hour, we're running out of time. You said, well...
I know. We could probably go all afternoon, and we would still run out of time. But what's one last thing that you'd like to leave our audience with?
You know, I think the tour that is coming up September, October, is my chance to go out and see people like Ed Morgan in Florida, who's been such a big supporter.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we were going to Europe, Ian Tasker, over there. These guys are all on the 3 site and the 3.2 Facebook thing. William Hanley, and Rolf. I mean,
yes,
Rolf, who mans the 3 site. Rolf, single-handedly, I say this to him, put 3 on the map again. You know, I don't know, 5 years
uh-huh.
ago, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And the guy's amazing, and he never ceases to not have an idea or do something that I can't thank him enough for. He's been an invaluable part of sort of relaunching the 3 thing and really adding to my career. How do you thank people like that? Well, you just got to go. I've met Rolf on a Greg King tour before, so I've seen him. But you got to mm-hmm. go out there, and you got to shake their hand and say thank you for years of support in making me feel like what I had to say was interesting to you enough to listen to the albums and support the music and let me live my dream kind of the way I'd like to do it. I mean, how do you really thank a base of people for that? You got to go out and shake their hand, I guess. That's what I'm excited about.
We're going to get cut off for the live show in just a second. So I want to say bye to everybody. We'll have like another few seconds after the live show ends. But thank you for being on the show, Robert. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And
it's always a pleasure.
My gosh, it is always a pleasure, and we do always have fun. I am looking forward to the tour, and I am picturing us being there at the show. One of the shows that is out here.
Yeah. I'm picturing a San Francisco show, at least maybe Redwood City, possibly, not too far down the peninsula there. But, you know, Sacramento, Redwood City, I know there's one in Monterey, and we're heading down to L.A., past there a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
all
exciting.
Right, cool.
A lot of work.
Maybe we can go down to LA and see you down there with Xander.
Oh, Xander and I are going to have a big party. I don't think he wants his mom there.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll go to the one up here.
Well, he's going to cook for me, right?
Yeah, he is. He's going to cook for you. He finished his year-long cooking journey, and now he's just cooking for friends and family and people he loves. All right. Well, thanks for the laughs. Thank you so much for the music and the conversation, and bye for now.
See you later.
Yeah, keep living your music, and everyone out there, live your music. Do it now. Bye.